I'm Pat O'Rourke, and I'm the Chancellor of the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I'd like to express my thanks and appreciation to all of you for coming out. I would like to welcome you to the infamous Signers Hall, which some of you may have read about prior to coming here today, but we're really quite proud of the facility and think it is going to serve us very well and represent a particular period in Alaska's history in a very, very notable way. I'd like to take just a few moments to introduce a few individuals. I'd like to introduce Dr. Don O'Dowd, President of the University of Alaska System, and his wife, Jan. Don, Jan. I'd like to introduce my wife, Sharla Ranch, and Colin and Connor and Megan. Excuse me, Colin's an older one. We have a relatively short program. John Whitehead's going to talk a little bit about the history of the facility and what actually occurred here. The name of the facility is now officially Signers Hall, and that's probably the first official name that it's ever had. At the time that funding was being sought for the reconstruction, we decided that, or we determined that Building 408 was a name that at least was identified on one of the appropriations for the facility at one time. Of course, it was known as the museum and the library and a variety of other places. If that's historically incorrect, John, please feel free to correct it when you're up here. I would like to introduce Ann Termorello. Ann Termorello is our Director of Admissions and Records, and probably as much as anyone within the University of Alaska at the present time has followed this campus and many of its activities for a long period of time. Ann, please.
Some people measure success by how far one comes in their lifetime. And if you apply that to my life, you'll see I haven't come very far, especially in the last 31 years, because I have spent a lot of time in this building. And I call it the old gym, or the gym. I'm of that era. But being a non-athlete, it's amazing how much time I spent here. But in the days when I was a student, we had required PE for women, so that kept me here for 2 years. And then I was courting, or being courted by, and engaged to and married a jock. So what can I say? I spent a lot of time in this building. In addition to my personal reasons for being here, this was everything on the campus. This was the place where the basketball games were held. This is the place where formal dances were held. The ROTC drill team drilled in here. It was a sight to see. We had concerts. We had registration. I don't remember registration at all. We had physical education classes, intramural events. We had funerals. And we had great world-renowned speakers speak to us in here. With tremendous utilization of the facility, Dr. O'Rourke. The building was adaptable to almost any occasion, but I think that the one that all of us from the old gym era will probably remember the most is Starvation Gulch. And the putting together Starvation Gulch brought to the faculty and the students all together in a common cause for entertainment, for costumes, for decoration, and for 100% Everclear punch, which was really something. So, usually we had a bar that sat right here, and that was the Starvation Gulch Bar. Probably more money went into the bar than anything. It was just a sight to see. And then a stage down at that end. You all understand that this has been built forward. And there was a stage down at that end. And then lots of activities in the little niches underneath the balcony. The balcony was dark. And it was better if you didn't know what was going on there. Some of the activities were for raising money. They had a jail that you could buy, you know, a place in jail for your best friend and so forth. But some of them I never did want to find out what was going on. Now, there's a picture up here that's hanging in a place of honor. But this is not the first great work of art to hang in this place. In 1954, I was commissioned to paint a work of art and hang above the Starvation Gulch bar. Now, as you can imagine from the tone of Starvation Gulch, the type of picture that I was to paint was of a to be focal point, or maybe a centerfold, but it was to hang there. And I couldn't get any of the girls in the dorm to model for this, and I really wasn't too good at it just on my own. But I got parts of girls, parts of different people, a leg from Beverly, an arm from Barbara, and so forth. And nowadays they say parts is parts, and they say that this isn't too good. But Sophie was a big success. She went together very well, and she was stolen before the night was over, never to be seen again. And I did hear, though, that she ended up in Nerland Hall for a couple of years. Perhaps one of the most interesting decorating jobs was done at commencement. In those days, there wasn't much objection raised when the men from physical plant would sneak out into the woods and cut down some birch trees, bring them in, and they had to be really careful on their timing. They'd bring them in time for the trees to be in full bloom at commencement, and they would be lashed to these poles, the poles in, that you can see up around the balcony, where that's actually how far back the gym floor went. And it was just really beautiful. It was it made this a very special place for commencement. And I think the university spirit was displayed in the building during graduation, very well in the building in the graduation of 1957 when I graduated, because I remember very clearly Sidney Chapman, eminent scientist, was a member of our faculty. And he escorted his own PhD candidate right up the center of the floor to the stage to receive his PhD, tipping his English mortarboard to the student as he escorted me. It was just something I'll never forget. And I think that it just showed the kind of friendship between the faculty members and those of us who are graduating, the faculty who took the time to get to know us in and out of this building, and who joined us in celebrating our achievements here and who remained our good friends for a long time. There's not many buildings left on the campus that were here during my student days. Much time, effort, and money has been put into the refurbishing of this building in order to commemorate its place in the historical period surrounding the writing and approval of the Constitution. Although the old gym, or the old museum, or the old paper storage warehouse, whatever era you came from, it never looked like this before. But we appreciate the commitment that was made to bring this building back into productive use. And for those of us who remember, have so many fond memories about it over the years, it will help us to remember some wonderful times that we want to cherish forever. Thank you very much.
To Bill, do you commemorate a different era? Did you come after Ann, or? Okay. But another former student of ours is now also an employee of the university, Bill Jacobson. Bill?
Thank you, Pat. A little earlier this evening, I happened to see Pat upstairs, and I said that, you didn't tell me what I'm supposed to say. Well, you didn't tell me what I'm not supposed to say either, so. The floor looks about the same as when I first came here in 1954, except there's a few black lines missing. Other than that, it looks startlingly different. It looks beautiful. Along with Ann, who I mentioned, I came a year after she did. She came the same year my wife did. We spent a lot of time in this building. There was dances, there was musical programs, of which I was a part of many of them. If anybody's around here back from the days of Lorraine Donahue, I think the university chorus sang the Alaska flag song in this building for the first time. One very large musical piece that Lorraine Donahue put together was called Denali, which was sung for the first time, and I'm not too sure, but I think about the only time that it was ever sung was in this building. It was a many-page thing. We spent many, many, many weeks rehearsing it, and one thing that happened during the course of singing that was that for some unknown reason to anybody, and to this day, anybody that was in that chorus can't tell you why, everybody stopped singing, and Ron Busby came out loud and clear, a solo all by himself. Like I say, nobody knows why it happened, but it came off pretty good. And we didn't tell the audience that that's the way it was planned, but it sounded pretty good anyway. We spent many a Saturday night in this building at dances, at basketball games. I'm sure Joe Tremorello will remember playing the City League and teams from the military bases here. They spent a lot of time playing those teams because at that time there was no money for outside travel very much for athletic teams. Of course, about the only athletic team we had was the basketball team. But so they played what was available, and they won some and they lost some. Starvation Gulch was a big thing here. I can remember over, I guess it's about where the exit sign is back there. For some reason or other, there was always a group that used to steal the cannon from the Clay Street Cemetery, and it always appeared at dances on the front steps of old Hess Hall, which was the girls' dorm at the time. And I think there's a picture in an old Denali showing my future wife and myself sitting on that cannon barrel. And it said something to the effect, we became Mr. and Mrs. in midstream or something. We got married in December. But the dances, the musical programs, graduation, the university chorus, always sang at the graduation in those days. As Ann mentioned, they always managed to get the birch trees out here. I think that was before the Environmental Protection Agency was created. So there was nobody to argue about cutting down these small birch saplings, and it really did look beautiful in here. They had the blue curtain up at the far end, and the university seal up there, and it was a beautiful setting for graduation. Of course, it's always nice to have one outside, but I don't think they ever planned an outside graduation at this campus, that I can recall anyway. It's always been, well, all the graduations I've ever seen were either in this room or down in what is now Patty Center. But looking around here now, it's a beautiful building, and it's got a lot of years left in it. Thank you.
I should mention that it is thanks to the University of Alaska Museum that we have the Stewart painting hanging here. Thank you, Basil. Lou Rowinsky probably spent some time in this facility. Lou?
Well, I first knew this building as a student, too, and spent lots of time here before I became associated with the museum and finally had the chance to move into the building on a more or less permanent basis in 1963. And I spent from 1963 to 1980 in the building almost every day. So I've gotten to know it very well, and I recognized the floor, too, as soon as I walked in. I think one of the remarkable things about the remodeling job is that they finally, I think, although I'm not, haven't been in all the side offices, have removed the odor of old sneakers, which used to linger here for years and years. They've also changed their attitude toward remodeling since Harold Bird was here and used to ask me, how many sheets of plywood do you need this time? But I think there's an improvement in the way things are done, perhaps. When we moved in 1963, we were told that we should consider this temporary, and we considered it temporary until 1980, and a great amount of our time during that whole period was spent in writing planning documents for the next move, either to another building or to try and do something with this one. It was lots of fun planning, and I think we finally succeeded in getting out, and I'm glad that the building is still here and being used. We brought lots of people into here, and lots of people complained when we moved down here from the third floor of the Eielson building. They thought that this was a definite change that was not for the good. We had ruined all those lovely old exhibits up there, and we were obviously never going to replace them. The same thing was heard when we moved out of here and up onto the hill, so I guess that's just something that goes with any kind of a move. Lots of people came into the museum. The number of visitors increased every year. The number of collections we had increased every year. And beside this building, we had things stashed in corners of the Bunnell building. We had things in the basement of the Eielson building. We had warehouses all over the place. And we had, anytime I heard somebody was moving out of a space, I tried to see if we could get hold of it to store more things in. And we, I think, finally succeeded in getting a new building because people were tired of having all these odd closets all over the place labeled museum. We were very happy here for a long time. We enjoyed our work here. I enjoyed being in this building. I had a very lovely office up on the third floor, which I wouldn't recognize now, except the view outside is still the same. The choke cherries are there, and I used to enjoy watching the grosbeaks and the waxwings in them, and I hope Jim Drew still sees those grosbeaks and waxwings in the same place. We were happy here for many years in the building, and I hope the people who have now moved into it will have many happy years here too.
Dr. Hedrick, you should note, 17 years planning phase one of the museum. You've only been planning phase two for five or so. It's my pleasure to introduce to this audience Dr. John Whitehead, who is professor of history with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I think has done a great deal for us over the years to try to highlight and bring out some of those elements of history that have occurred here. Those of you who attended the celebration of statehood last year, I'm sure, might have had an opportunity to hear some of John's comments at that time. John Whitehead.
Well, I've entitled my little talk, Why Signers Hall? As Chancellor O'Rourke has already alluded, this building has attracted much comment in the last few months, and I imagine there are people out there who are saying, why Signers Hall? Why indeed? Anyone who tackles that question is going to have a lot of explaining to do. But this evening, I'll try to explain only the part I had a hand in doing, that is, selecting the name for the building. Now, you've heard from Lou and Ann and Bill about all the marvelous ways in which this building used to be used. After all, it's the oldest academic structure on campus, dating back to 1931. So why did I suggest that it be named for something that took place on only one day and one year? And if any of you have had a look at the Alaska Constitution, you will find that even we made a slight mistake. It wasn't signed on February the 6th, as we're commemorating today, but on February the 5th. But the delegates got so excited on that February the 5th day that they had to reconvene the next morning on February the 6th. So this day actually sort of symbolizes a big two-night party. But the Constitution was actually signed on the 5th of February. Well, if the signers of the Alaska Constitution were only here for a brief time, and also they had not been very well connected to the University of Alaska. As far as I could find, only one had a degree from here. Two others claimed they'd taken a couple of night courses. A full eight of them had gone to the University of Washington in Seattle. So some of you old-timers may be saying, hey, why don't you give them a building down there in Seattle? They'd probably have preferred it there. Well, aside from the general reason that I'm not for doing anything in Seattle or giving anything to it, there's another reason why I suggested the name of Signers Hall. When the delegates to the Constitutional Convention chose to hold their convention on our campus from November 1955 to February of 1956, this symbolized one supremely important fact. the people of Alaska had announced that they had to have a university in which to do the single most important act they had ever planned, the act of writing a state constitution which would secure Alaska's admission into the Union. Only the atmosphere and seriousness of the Fairbanks campus was suitable for such an act. No other place would do. Possibly they had in mind the experience of their brethren in Hawaii, who had held a constitutional convention in the spring of 1950. Right in the middle of Honolulu, right at Iolani Palace, a place some of you may have seen on various vacations. Iolani Palace had been the site of kings and queens, of revolutions and annexations. The Hawaiians thought it would be a wonderful place to hold a convention. But alas, it was too much in the center of things. Even the Congress of the United States decided to stage a distracting display by holding hearings of the House Un-American Activities Committee right in the view of the convention, and going into it and pulling out various delegates to quiz them on whether they were loyal to the United States of America. No such distractions were to disturb the Alaskans. Fairbanks in November seemed a safe spot away from the snooping noses of senators of the United States. And indeed, there were a few distractions here in that winter of 55 and 56, save for the visits of school children who had come to see what few other school children had ever seen and which none would ever see again, the writing of the last constitution which would secure the admission of a state to the United States. And so the university proved to be everything the delegates had hoped for. Of course, the bulk of their deliberations did not take place in this building. They took place at what was then the new student union, now our bookstore. We call it Constitution Hall. So you may be saying, so why give these guys two buildings when a lot of people haven't even gotten one? Well, the reason to me is simple. When the delegates walked down this room, one by one, before a crowd of 1,000, with 500 more standing outside, to affix their names to the Constitution of Alaska, they proved that they had completed what they set out to do. The convention had actually opened its session in this very building on November the 8th. Then it was called Convention Hall. But as some of the delegates said at the time, they had no idea that they would ever be able to succeed. Could people from all walks of Alaska come together and decide on anything? Or would the regionalism that so often throws our legislature into disarray work on those delegates here in Fairbanks? Could they do it? But then on February the 5th, 54 of the 55 signers walked here and signed their names. Only one went back home, and of course we would have liked to have had all 55, but when the Constitution of the United States had been written in 1787, only 39 would show up to sign it. So compared to the rest of our country, ours was a pretty good batting average. So when Signers Hall was the scene of completing that Constitution, they showed us that Alaskans could do more than just talk about something. They could succeed, and they could complete it. So Constitution Hall, you may want to remember, was the place of a lot of talk. Signers Hall was the signal of achievement. In creating a state and signing that constitution, in the only place the delegates thought they should do it, they left the rest of us quite a challenge and a legacy on that day. They gave us the challenge to be the University of Alaska, the University of all Alaska. Since that day in 1956, it seems to me that this has been a bit of an elusive goal. Of course, the university has been split into many campuses, but we are still the flagship. We're still the campus whose mission it is to uphold the traditions of the American State University. those traditions which say that we'll draw students from all over our state and bring them here, educate them together, so that they can go back to their separate regions with a common purpose and a common experience, and a university to which the state will turn first when it needs expertise to solve its problems, in the way that the delegates turned first to this campus. Well, I would certainly say that we have tried and tried to become the University of Alaska, but have we succeeded? Well, it's my observation that as hard as we've tried, we always find ourselves caught between two widely divergent poles. All at once, we're the University of Fairbanks, secure in our local, safe little Tanana Valley, where almost half of our students come from. So about half of us are the University of Fairbanks. Then on the other pole, we want to be the University of the World. Our scientists proclaim their national and international fame in observing the heavens, and we daringly embark on links with Asia, Scandinavia, and all of the world. Fully 21% of our student body is from outside Alaska, including the lower 48 states, Hawaii, and the rest of the world. So it seems to me in Fairbanks we've come up with our own peculiar and distinctive blend of provincial worldliness. Now, there's nothing wrong with this. It's all commendable in its own right. But what's happened to the Alaska in our name? Only 30% of our student body comes from Alaska outside of Fairbanks. And while we can commendably see ourselves as the center for native students in Alaska, the state's population center of Anchorage sends us only about 12% of our student body. Now, I know some of you are saying, that's fine with me, I don't like them. Let them stay down there. Keep their newspapers and their hotels and their banks. But when those 54 men and women signed their names here, they represented all of Alaska. They were, in fact, the most representative group of Alaskans who had ever assembled to do anything. And they had to have this university. So by naming this building Signers Hall, I hope it can symbolize that challenge left to us in 1956 to become the University of all Alaska. And it seems to me fitting that the admissions office now occupies this building, the place that will recruit those students. And when the day comes that every high school counselor from Barrow to Ketchikan, including the high schools in Anchorage, will say to their senior students, so you're thinking about college. Well, your logical choice is the university in Fairbanks. That's where the people who will be developing your state for the rest of your life will be. If you want to be an Alaskan, that's where you go. When that day comes, then we will have met the challenge of the signers. So why Signers Hall? To me, it's the symbol to remind us that the University of Alaska is our name. Now, if this is to be a symbolic hall, we better have some symbols. If any of you were to tap somebody else or tap me on the shoulder and say, would you believe this is where the last Constitution in the United States was signed? Well, all I would say is, well, you couldn't prove it by me. What's here to show us what happened here? Well, I wondered about this. I wondered, well, if some of the signers were here, would they recognize the place they had once been? Well, both Bill and Lou have confirmed what I thought. They would say, the basketball floor remains. But what about our newer students who didn't dribble in here? A girl said to me at registration, hey, do I have to take all this stuff back over to that Singers Hall? Singers Hall? What was she talking about? Well, all I could figure out was either she had dyslexia or she wandered in here and thought we were getting ready for the Grand Ole Opry. So we need something to symbolize what took place here. So if you'll look behind you or in front of you, depending on where you're standing, to that glass case, you'll see a bit of history. On February the 6th, the day the convention adjourned, the delegates met over in Constitution Hall on what was the most emotional day of the convention. President of the convention, Bill Egan, soon to be our future governor, gave thanks to University President Ernest Patty for the university's kindness and generosity. He then presented Patty with one of the signed copies of the Constitution and a gavel, the gavel of the convention. Patty responded to Egan by saying, "Our labors here have been a labor of love, and you can realize how much we have appreciated having you here, and how much we think of the fine efforts and the fine accomplishments you made. It will be our plan to have a suitable case made so we can display this Constitution with the preamble and with your signatures properly in the new library when it's built, and in the meantime in the museum, so that our young Alaskans who are here will be inspired, as all of us have been inspired when we've gone to the Congress and the Library of the Congress in Washington and stood before a copy of the Constitution of the United States." Well, you know how the administration works. Things get confused after the memo from the president goes to purchasing, then to physical plant, then back to central audit. Nothing ever really comes out the way it started out. As far as I can find, a glass case was constructed and put in the museum, but by the time I got here in 1978, the case contained not the Constitution of Alaska, but a big brown bear. So there it is behind you today, ladies and gentlemen, 29 years later. Give them a chance and they'll straighten things out. There is the glass case which President Patty promised, including a Constitution. There were about six copies that were signed on that day, and the gavel of the Constitutional Convention. And I hope, and I've now been assured, that that case will remain in this hall and signify that we have accepted the Alaska challenge which the signers left us. Well, the time has come to close our ceremony, and we'll do it in the same way that Bill Egan and Ernest Patty closed their ceremony here on February the 5th. After the signers had put their name on the document, Bill Egan proclaimed that it had been duly signed. He then told the delegates, "We will never have true peace of mind until we are taken into full membership as one of the great states of the Union." Then the choir group from Ladd Field led the assembled onto higher glory with a rendition of Alaska's flag song. And to push us on today to accept the challenge of the signers, John Hopkins and the Choir of the North will perform once again Alaska's flag song.
Thank you, Professor Hopkins, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to introduce Alaska's newest member of the Board of Regents, Grace Scheibel. Grace, welcome. Thank you for coming. This does conclude our ceremony. It is an open house. There are two more floors, so please feel free to wander through the facility. Thank you all very much for coming out.